When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Mason 10, that's deflected and picked up. Mosey, he'll take it in. It's a pick six and a touchdown.
The New York Jets select Zach Wilson, quarterback, BYU.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to Turn the Jets podcast. I'm your host, Will Parkinson, at WillPod11 on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Joined by my my future podcast and podcast co-host, DJ Bienname. We're going to be previewing a little bit of what this podcast we're going to be releasing here this summer is going to be about. DJ, how we doing? A little draft recap, draft recap action.
And I'm chilling, man. You know what I'm saying? I'm kind of decompressing, to be honest, because it was a lot of draft stuff, especially that first day. First day, we got three draft picks. You know what I'm saying? That was a lot of writing I had to do in a very short period of time. So,
it was a crazy weekend. One of those weekends, you know, between being down in Mobile with the Jets coaching, then being in Indy, all these different workouts, pretty much felt like a year's worth of pre-draft process this year. Obviously the Jets being out of competition pretty much in October, you know, kind of helped with that, with the draft being, being obviously important. We'll start with, you know, pick four, Sauce at four. You were probably the most high, like the highest person on Sauce and taking a corner at four of any, you know, of anybody. What was kind of your reaction when they actually did end up going corner, and how do you think Sauce kind of impacts his defense, going forward this year?
Yeah, man, I was hoping I was the pick. You know, obviously I had reported there was a chance that Ekwonu was going to be the pick. I was glad that they went with Sauce because Sauce just feels a much bigger need, can bring a bigger impact. I just didn't see the point in drafting another offensive tackle, especially when you have $50 million invested into the offensive line. That's fourth highest in the NFL. Granted, you can get out of Bant and Connor McGovern's deal after next year, but again, like, you've already invested a bunch, man. The most important positions in the NFL right now: quarterback, tackle, DN, cornerback, receiver. And you already have your stuff invested at O-line, receiver, you know what I'm saying, DN. At a certain point, you need to really, really, really invest at corner. And I'm glad that they did. And the impact that he can have is obviously this year, I'm not expecting too much because, again, like, he's a rookie. Hopefully this year you can have DJ Reed guard a lot of number ones and let Sauce guard some of the number twos, or like a scenario where you have Sauce on a number one with safety help over the top, you know, just to give him that confidence, just get that, you know, used to guard NFL receivers, but having some help. And then DJ Reed just completely remove the number two cornerbacks. I mean, the number two receivers. So that's some of the what I envision the Jets can do with, you know, a Sauce. Because again, like in 2023, 2024, hopefully he can be that shutdown corner. But in 2022, that gives the Jets a legitimate, talented secondary that they just really, you know, last year they just didn't have, especially all the injuries that happened.
Yeah, it'll be interesting with Sauce because it comes at it from a couple different angles, right? Obviously, we talk about culture changer and locker room people, and there's all this different stuff. You know, it's sometimes it kind of falls on deaf ears. A lot of people are all talk, you know, I know Jets fans, you know, Jamal Adams said he was going to be the difference and it's going to change things here. And there's been people that have come through the Jets organization, like many organizations, right? You know, we talk about the Dolphins, it happens the same thing. The Bills until recently, it's been the same, you know, mantra of, oh, we're going to change things. And then it never happens. But what I like about Sauce is it's his confidence. It's kind of the aura that surrounds him. Not so much, you know, he talks, but I don't know that he's this big talker of like, you know, he said on Around the NFL podcast, you know, we're going to change things, but it wasn't like, oh, we're going to go win the Super Bowl. It was just like, you know, we're not talking about the past. We're going to just kind of move on. And I felt like the way he carries himself is this swagger in the locker room. I think DJ Reed's got a swagger to him at corner. I think Echols and Bryce Hall are both confident football players. Jordan Whitehead's an uber confident football player, as he should be. LaMarcus Joyner. There's something about that room that's changed so dramatically. And, you know, corner was probably their cornerback room and tight end room going into camp last year is probably the worst group in the NFL, you know, kind of top to bottom on both sides. And between the two of them, especially a corner, like to think, you know, they added DJ Reed and Sauce and they still kept right on to some of the guys that got Matt pretty meaningful reps, right? You got Michael Carter the second in the slot as well. He's a confident football player. So you need that. Sauce's ability to kind of that press technique and kind of jam people at the line, especially in a division where you're going to need to get hands on Tyreek early. You need to get hands on Jalen Waddle early, Gabe Davis, Diggs. Like, it's important that you have pass rush, but also in which the Jets address and we'll get to eventually, but you know, having a guy that you feel really good about as that lockdown guy allows DJ Reed and everyone to be slotted in the right position. So I like the pick again. I thought they'd go tackle just because, you know, Joe Douglas has an affinity and like a fetish for offensive linemen in the first round, yeah, as we've seen. Sense. Right. But you know, I'm actually happy. I, at the time I was a little lukewarm on the Sauce pick. I think once we got the entirety of the first round and the entirety of the draft, the pick looks better as it goes on, right? To still be able to go back and get Jermaine and Garrett Wilson. And I guess we'll go to Garrett Wilson next. You know, we've talked about it for a while. You know, you love, you know, Jameson Williams, Drake London, you know, on and on. Garrett Wilson was the guy that I felt like we talked about a lot in the beginning, and it kind of tapered off a little bit. There was so much Drake London buzz, and I still, you know, I'm still of the opinion if he's there at 10, I think it's a lot of smoke. I think he might end up being a pick. That was, you know, and it's – yeah, no, it's of course you lie at the end, right? You, yeah, you know, we have three of our top eight players.
When Salah said, you know, he said, I think on SNY that, oh, no, Wilson was our top guy. I mean, it's easy to say that now because, like, Atlanta kind of forced Wilson becoming your top guy because they took Drake London.
But yeah. No, and then look, they end up Garrett Wilson. Garrett Wilson's a consensus top one or two receiver on pretty much every, you know, every board. And the Jets get a playmaker who's dynamic. He's got good feet, really good feet. He's a good route runner. He's got good hands. He plays bigger. He's kind of the ideal receiver size a little bit. As somebody who played a receiver at 6'3", like sometimes, you know, either it takes a little while for you to get going, you know, in terms of long-term speed, or, you know, you can kind of get chopped down. Sometimes injuries, lower body injuries can kind of happen. He's not the Elijah Moore 5'7", 5'8" guy. He's at 6 foot, 190. You know, he'll get an NFL conditioning program. And there was some concern about weight. I'm not sure in today's NFL if that really matters quite as much as it did 20 years ago. Were you surprised? They actually did go receiver at 10. It felt like almost too obvious that they might pass it up and go edge rusher there.
Yeah, no, I thought there was a chance that they could have gone. You know, I thought Jermaine was going to be the pick, but I understood the process, and a lot of this comes back down to process, not just a pick. Because you want to see the vision, you want to see the objective, and the objective was to get Zach Wilson another weapon. Because I knew that, you know, Drake had a shot if he was going to be there. I knew that's one that was pretty with the most buzz. Then obviously, Wilson was also in that mix. J-Mo was in that mix, but you know, J-Mo just with the injury. The Jets kind of need, they don't have as much runaway room on their rebuild. Like I mentioned, they got to start turning this thing around. But again, once they went Wilson, I saw the vision. Wilson is going to be another weapon for Zach. He can obviously take the top off the defense. He obviously has excellent routes. He's dynamic, man. At the end of the day, it was about getting Zach as many playmakers as possible to ensure he has a very healthy development. So I thought Jermaine was going to be the pick. But again, like, them going Wilson, there's no shame in that. Now, if they went something like, I don't know, like a D-tackle or something, or remember Trevor Penny, you know, remember the buzz about that. But again, like, you know, that was still a good move at the end of the day.
Yeah, I'm a fan of Wilson's game. I think he's just, you know, something that I know was talked about throughout the draft process, was just how smart Garrett Wilson is from a football, you know, football sense and picking up the playbook and things like that. And Obviously, the Jets had some issues with that with some of the younger receivers on the roster last year. And you know, learning different spots and being able to kind of be interchangeable and be confident they know what they're doing. It's a complex scheme, and getting a rookie that can hit the ground running that's been productive, obviously at Ohio State, incredibly productive, but also somebody that can come on the field and contribute from day one is important as Zach's development. You know, as you mentioned, the guy that I thought, you know, I thought they would, Jermaine Johnson was like almost too much. It was a season to be a Seahawk, a Giant, or a Jet. It felt like, you know, all pre-draft process. And I remember after, you know, I guess obviously as it's been reported, you know, the Jets were doing the same after pick 15. I'm like, 16's going, you didn't go to the Chargers at 7. Like, it's starting to, you know, picks coming down. I'm like, are they going to move up for this guy or what? Like, they're not really going to sit at 35, are they? And they obviously didn't. They trade up, you know, pick 26 to get Jermaine. Mm-hmm. You were very high in Jermaine. I know we speak to some people that were, you know, former pros, former defensive linemen. I know Marcus Spears, LeJay Doosville, incredibly high on him. Connor Rogers had him 6 on his big board. Mm-hmm. What was your kind of reaction when they took Jermaine? And, you know, how does he kind of fit in this defense going forward? Because I think he's the one that puts this first round from good to really, really damn good.
Yeah, man. I think Jermaine Johnson fills a very big need because obviously they still needed edge rushers. They still needed a guy that can impact the running game from the defensive side. And Jermaine thrives in that. I mean, I have Florida State, like that was, those were things that he really spoke highly about. Every time I talked to people around the league, whether it's national scouts or executives or former players, they talked about that. In fact, he had a plethora of pass rush moves, and that's the way you can win in the NFL and become a really, really good edge rusher if you have various amount of ways. Now, there are some other guys that can win with only a couple or maybe just one because they just are just so physically gifted in that one area, but Jermaine Johnson has the hip flexibility, the quickness, the hand, the way he uses his hands to get after quarterbacks. I mean, he's a legitimate pass rusher, and he's going to help their run defense. That's why Robert Saleh said verbatim that he was one of the more pro-ready defensive ends in this class, and I can see why he believes that, which is why, you know, as you said, like, getting Garrett Wilson made this draft go from, I mean, getting Jermaine Johnson made this draft go from good to really good to like, oh, this can be something that could turn around your franchise pretty quickly.
Yeah, so I think the thing with Jermaine and remember, and the reason edge rusher may have been something they wanted to address. It wouldn't have necessarily been a day one thing if you felt really good about Carl coming back. You know, he wasn't coming off a serious injury. But to have guys like a guy that can come in and rotate right away with Jermaine, with John Franklin Myers, Bryce Huff, and Carl Lawson. You don't have to – now you can kind of ease Carl Lawson back in. Day one of training camp, you don't need Carl Lawson at 100%. You can kind of work him back in coming off a serious injury. Jermaine's a pro-ready pass rusher. He's got good hands. He's obviously that, you know, that 10-yard split was something. At the second he ran that at the combine, I'm like, the Jets can be all over him. I know they saw him at the Senior Bowl, and he had a really nice week. Obviously, you know, only practiced 2 days because actually, quite frankly, how good he played. It made a lot of sense, man. And I just – I know there's concerns over age. I think there's a couple of positions where age actually, frankly, doesn't really matter to me. And edge rusher is one of them. First of all, guys usually mature in the NFL and kind of hit their peak a little bit later as an edge rusher. You know, at 27, 28, usually year 4, year 5. And like Jermaine's 23, the guys, I know there's been some discourse, you know, from, you know, some other networks on, oh, the Jets should have just waited and taken Arnold Ebiketie, or who I really liked, or Boye Mafe. And Boye Mafe and Arun Lebeketi are 24 years old already. It's just, I'm not concerned about the age perspective. The Jets drafted 20-year-old Breece Hall. So if you want the average age thing, the Jets also need to win some games, and get a pro-ready guy that can come in with a really high floor is super important. And the Jets can't sit there and just go, oh, let's draft David Ojabo and stash him for 3 years down the line. They don't have that luxury. This regime's in – Saleh's in year 2. Joe Douglas in year 4, and they've won like 6 games since 2019. So – getting a guy that can come in, contribute in the locker room, can contribute on the field, super important. And they got a 5th-year option on him at the position that costs, is one of the most expensive positions in football.
Nah, yeah. Man, I completely agree with that point. Cause yeah, they got to start winning. I mean, I remember talking to, you know, people in the building, like, yo, we can't go, we can't start 0-6, 0-7, or, you know what I'm saying, 1-2, I mean, 1-5, you know, 2-5 again. Like, we got to start winning. We got to turn this thing around. I'm like, yeah, no, that's a good point. Because again, back to the point that you made, that, you know, Joe Douglas is basically his third full offseason. They have 2-6 twins in the past 2 years. Granted, you know, under the proper context, you know, both years were basically completely different rosters. But again, like, they got to start winning. And I mean, that's just the result, you know, business. I mean, that's just the concept of this business that you gotta at least start stacking up W's, and Jermaine Johnson can step in and be a part of a rotation that's gonna have now Carl Lawson, it's gonna have Quinnen Williams, it's gonna have JFM, it's gonna have Sheldon Rankins, you know, Jacob Martin, along with again Jermaine Johnson, who can all rotate, and now you have gonna have a good amount of fresh bodies who can make an impact in the game. Oh, and don't forget, you know, Bryce Huff too, you know. So you're gonna have a plethora of guys that can help in the run and pass game.
Yeah, and that's look, that's why the Sauce pick looks so much better when you kind of in totality, when you look at they were able to get edge and then vice versa. They were able to address corner and edge, right? So, you know, you need to be strong in the back end, obviously, and the Jets have drastically improved. I still think they're maybe one body short at safety, but the starting lineup of Whitehead, Joyner, DJ Reed, you know, Sauce and Michael Carter the second on the back end, and then a front four of early downs, you know, a JFM, Carl Lawson, Jermaine, Quinnen, Rankins, like, they're pretty strong up front, and this is, you know, the scheme values. You need to get pressure with four. You need to be aggressive, get upfield, and the Jets have kind of done that with, you know, adding both these pieces. The Jets leave day one. I think everyone's feeling great, and if the draft kind of – if they botch the rest of their picks, I still think you would feel pretty good about, you know, where they were at just because three first-round picks. What comes out, you know, it's Friday night, 7:30. Jets trade up for the Giants. You know, people are looking at – you know, we mentioned Breece Hall, but it was more, you know, a Petrie, a Chad Muma, Christian Harris, N'Kobe Dean, obviously pre kind of finding out a little bit about the injuries. And we see the Jets trade up. They take Breece Hall. My initial reaction was, wow, like this is, they're not fucking around. Like Joe Douglas is like, I am going to give this offense every opportunity to be successful. Were you surprised they moved up for a running back or even took one there? And what are your kind of impressions, you know, watching some Breece Hall and, you know, how he's going to fit into this offense?
Yeah, no, I mean, when they traded up for him, I didn't anticipate that to be the pick. But again, like, he's a baller. I don't really subscribe to the Discord around, oh, trading up for running back, yada, 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 yada. Like, it's so stupid. It's dumb. Like, you're getting a guy in the second round at the running back position who, if he hits, then now you have, you know, potentially having like a JT type running back or Nick Chubb, you know what I'm saying? Once you, or Dalvin Cook, like those guys make a difference for an offense, and Breece Hall can for sure help Zach Wilson's development. And again, like the process, like what the Jets are trying to do, they're trying to make Zach Wilson's life as easy as possible. Like, that's all that matters. If bro is good, if Breece Hall can play, that is only going to make Zach Wilson's life easier, going to help his development. And guess what? That makes the offense better. That makes the defense better. That makes, you know, Rob Saleh's job easier. You know what I'm saying? Like, everything is a trickle effect, comes back down to Zach, you know, and making his life easy so everybody else's life is easy. So, again, like the whole nitpicking about the value and all that nerd talk, like, I just – when people start diving into all of that, I just – it blows. It doesn't. I understand where they're coming from, but sometimes you look at analytics and value and all that shit, it doesn't add in context. It doesn't add in the objective, what you're trying to do, which is make Zach Wilson's life easy. So getting a guy like that, you're gonna have him and Michael Carter, who can both, you know, be a thunder and lightning type of attack, you know, because they still want to run a running back by approach committee. So having that is only going to, again, in this offense, because this is an offense that's running back friendly.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
It's only going to make Zach Wilson's life easy. So, like, the criticism over the value in a chart and a clipboard, you know, charts that don't win games, period, point blank. So that's how I was looking at the whole ordeal. And I think it was a good pick.
Yeah, no, for me, context is super key, right? Yes, if the Jets would have moved up from 38 to 29 and given up an extra three next year and given up an extra two, and you're going, oh, that's a little, you know, maybe they could have waited on running back. If, you know, they gave up an extra, they gave up the last pick in their draft. They gave one pick 146. The Jets have used picks in the last, in the Joe Douglas regime, you know, with that pick, they've taken guys like Braden Mann and James Morgan and Michael Piron. Like, those guys are all basically non-rosterable players. And exactly, to go up and take Breece Hall, the Jets did not need a draft of 14 guys and building all these different young guys. They have the youngest roster in the NFL next year. They're good on youth. Trust me, they're more than fine. They need impact guys that can come in. Can they get Pro Bowl level potential players? Breece Hall is the second favorite to be offensive rookie of the year. He's a Pro Bowl level running back. He was the clear cut number one in the class. Contact balance, strong. Pass protection, good. He played in this scheme in college. That's huge. You know, everyone talks about offensive lines. You know, running backs are only as good at their offensive line. Yes, but like, a good running back can also make an average offensive line look better because they're able to follow their blocks properly. They don't jump the gun. They're able to, you know, they're able to read holes better. And, you know, if there's a small hole, they can make a cutback. They can get more out of nothing. So, you know, next year it's important, you know, for the Jets, right? If, you know, Zach Wilson dumps down a screen pass, you know, instead of that going for 4 yards, or, you know, some Michael Carter being banged up and going to Ty Johnson, they, you know, that play goes for 18 yards. Those little things do matter. And I just don't have a problem with the pick. I think he's an impact player. He fits the scheme. The Jets need Michael Carter more in that 1B role. That's what he played in college and he was more successful. So, yeah, I don't have a problem with it. We'll go to a little bit of kind of how the Jets, kind of, I guess, necessarily close the gap, right? You had an article come out today, I believe, you know, kind of hinting on this a little bit. And this draft, the AFC is an interesting division. I know the Bills are the class of the division right now, but there's three teams that are kind of in a bit of a mix in different parts of a rebuild and things like that. Where are the Jets kind of at roster wise? Just on paper, obviously, you need to see things develop, but where are they at roster wise? And were they able to close the gap on New England and Miami, or are they still pretty far away?
No, I think, they were able to close the gap for sure within the division. I think still, like, they're the clear-cut fourth team right now, but I think they for sure closed the gap to where, like they at the end of the year, they finished five games back. I think now, without a doubt, like, they're not five games back. They're for sure, like, at worst, maybe two. Because, one, I think New England's going to pull back from 10 wins to possibly, like, 8-7, because I'm just being honest. Like, if you just look at their roster, it isn't that impressive. Like, we just do the exercise and go through, like, the Jets roster across, like, the board in the division, actually, like, I was like, obviously quarterback right now they're fourth. Like, I don't even think that's, like, debatable. Like, Zach has to take noticeable steps to move from that fourth spot. But as of right now, he's fourth. But the talent is there to where he could be second for sure. Their running backs, I think you can make the argument that the Jets are on paper for sure, like, at the top in terms of just talent. Right, you got Breece Hall and you got Michael Carter with Ty Johnson, Tevin Coleman. Like, which running back room in the AFC East can you definitively say is better? There isn't really, like, maybe the Buffalo Bills, because, you know, I do like James Cook a lot. I like him, obviously, with the Devin Singletary. Then when you go to the tight end room, it's right there where everybody, I guess you could say maybe the Patriots tight end room is the best. But, I mean, yeah, you know, you can say the tight end room is the best. But, again, like, it's all bunched up, right? It's not like you can make an argument for each unit. In offensive line, I think Jets have the best offensive line. And then with, like, the Jets front 4/5, because, you know, like, the Patriots and Dolphins run a 3-4 out front. So, basically, you have the outside linebackers that, you know, always usually hovering around the line of scrimmage. And the Jets obviously have a 4-3. So, I think – their front versus like everybody else's front. You can make the argument on paper that's up there at the top. Unfortunately, it's hard to say that they're the best, especially after last year. Like, man, like they came into the league, you know, the year seemed like they were the best, but they didn't play up to that standard. But on paper, again, you have, imagine on third downs, you're going to have Carl Lawson, Quinn, and JFM, along with Jermaine Johnson rushing the passer. Like that can really, you know, have an impact. But again, like that's still like up there, right? Like how many can you truly say is legitimately better? I mean, maybe from a top perspective, maybe the Bills, maybe the Dolphins, the Patriots. I mean, well, maybe the Patriots, because they do have regardless of, you know, all the people they've lost, they still have this solid front. I will say that they do have a solid front. But again, like the Jets are in that mix, and then linebacker, I'll put them towards the bottom. I wouldn't put them last. I'll put them towards the bottom because, again, like you still need to jump from Quincy. Like I like CJ, but Quincy, Sherwood, like they got for sure take a step up next year. And then secondary, you still put the Jets last, but it's not like before where it was like the Jets were like in a whole different like planet compared to, because I mean, let's be honest, the AFC East has some really, really good secondaries. But the Jets were able to close ground. And I mean, the Patriots, their secondary took some hits. Like them losing JC Jackson was huge. Like, I don't think people realize like that was huge. But they still got Kyle Duggar. They still got Devin McCourty. They still have Jalen Mills. Still got Jonathan Jones. So they still have like a solid secondary, you know? But again, the Patriots, I mean, the Jets are right there. And obviously, the Bills, Dolphins, they're the class of the AFC when it comes to like the defensive backs. But then like, right below that is the Jets and Patriots tugging that out. But so when you look at like just on paper and look at the talent perspective, obviously you can see how everything gels, but on paper, like the Jets are right there talent-wise across the board. Just one of their, you know, bigger questions. Oh, we didn't even talk about receiver. Like you got Corey, you got Elijah, you got Garrett Wilson, you got Braxton. And then you just, now I'm not going to do the whole 1-5 argument because that's just dumb. We all saw what happens when you get down to your fourth and fifth guy. Shit looks ugly. You know what I'm saying? But if you just go to the top three guys, Corey, Elijah, Garrett versus the Bills top three, the Dolphins top three, it's really a conversation between the Bills, Dolphins, and it's really a conversation between Bills, Dolphins, and Jets because, I mean, the Patriots, I wrote in my column, I said their receiving core is basically like, you know, chicken with no season. Like, you can get the job done if you're hungry, but it ain't got no flavor, ain't got no sizzle, ain't got no pop, no nothing. So it's really between those three, the Patriots, I mean, not the Bills, Dolphins, and Jets. Obviously, I think the Dolphins have the best receiving core because Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, Cedric Wilson, that's pretty good. No Dolphin homer in me. But then you got the Jets versus the Bills. I mean, obviously, you know, Stephon Diggs is better than everybody just receiving core, but you can make the argument that Corey Elijah or Garrett could be better than Gabriel Davis and Isaiah McKenzie. But yeah, man, I mean, again, like the roster across the board looks good, which is why you can legitimately think that they should compete.
Yeah, so kind of to follow up there. So I guess the biggest issue for the Jets right now, and I think this is going to get hammered home 500 times, and, you know, we'll talk about this a bunch, especially over the summer. The biggest question marks on the Jets roster, no matter how much you like the way they finished the season, specifically Zach, and no matter how much you like Robert Saleh's phone calls and how much his energy, the two biggest question marks for them are head coach and quarterback, because they are unproven at this point. We can love their potential and love what they're going to be and what they're building. You know, Bill and Sean McDermott are both really damn good head coaches. Obviously, Bill is exceptional. Matt Jones, whether you like him or not, whether you think his ceiling is tapped out or not, he was a Pro Bowler last year, and take that for what you will. And he's not going to, I'm not sure how much better he's going to get, but he was pretty damn good, especially early on the season last year. He had a bit of a wall, so I guess there's that. But and then Josh Allen's probably – you could make a very strong case. He's the best player in the NFL, most important player in the NFL, right?
I'm telling you, man, he's so good.
Right, so – and then you get to the Jets and you get to the Miami, and they both have pretty big years for their quarterbacks respectively, right? Tua, there is no excuse for Tua to be bad, like zero.
Right.
And Zach Wilson, yes, it's year two, so it's not going to be quite the same expectation, but – there's the excuses are dwindling. This is not, you know, your dad, Sam Darnold Jets, or, you know, obviously I'm kidding. It was like 3 years ago, but then you get to the other positions. The Jets backfield is on paper one of the more talented backfields in football. You get to the tight end position. They have two above average starters or average starters at tight end. And then on top of that, they have a guy that has tight end one potential as their tight end three. That's huge. Their offensive line has a top probably 12 left tackle, conservatively, a top six or seven left guard. They probably have a top 12 center, the potential, you know, a top 10 right guard. And if Mekhi Becton is even remotely healthy, he's probably a top 15 right tackle, just being conservative on paper. So that's a damn good group. Receiver wise, one, two, three. The problem for the Jets is, like, on paper right now, they've improved so much. But, like, if Garrett Wilson pops and he has, you know, he has 80 for 1,000 and seven touchdowns next year, all of a sudden that receiver room looks damn good. Like, and not just like good, it's really good, right? Or Elijah takes that step. Elijah plays like week 8 through 12 Elijah, where he was, you know, top five in the NFL in yard. I mean, a lot of his blowouts, but, you know, had touchdowns and yards and stuff like that. Corey Davis is a third option is better than Isaiah McKenzie or Jameson Crowder, because Jameson Crowder was just on this roster last year and wasn't the number one option. So, you know, the defensive side of the ball is a bit still kind of TBD, right? They're, like you mentioned, they're in a division where Miami's probably got one of the best secondaries in football, if not the best. And if it's not the best, Buffalo is right down behind them, because Buffalo's got two real good safeties. They've got, you know, an all-pro corner coming back from ACL, and Kyrie Elam is going to be a stud. New England and the Jets are probably in a competition for third, and it's not that they're not good, right? And if Sauce takes a step and is really good as a rookie, he's Patrick Surtain as a rookie, now you're like, wow, this Jets, you know, this Jets secondary could be really good. So it all comes down to coach and quarterback, but there is no excuse to be getting boat raced by 40 points by New England. Or, you know, they play actually Buffalo pretty tight at the end of the year. I'm not sure how much, you know, I don't want to put too much screen, you know, salt into that, but
they did though. They did.
They have played Buffalo tight over the years. Even 2 years ago during COVID, like when Josh Allen, Bills kind of took that huge step and the Jets were putrid. They played them tough. We'll finish with this on kind of our first episode here, as we kind of get into what, you know, we'll get more in depth as rookie minicamp kicks off. We'll have an episode come out, kind of break down a little bit of, you know, kind of what happens, OTAs, minicamp, and then obviously during camp, we'll be kind of coming to you guys with, you know, daily and weekly content on, you know, what's happening at training camp, and elaborate a bit of, you know, the tweeting and, you know, how guys are doing, quotes in the locker room, updates, things of that nature. This is obviously going to change this question, because the Jets could add people, guys get hurt. You know, you see guys in camp, you'll think they'll take a step. What's the expectation level kind of going into the summer now? Has it changed a lot for you, or is it still like, it's more just about Zach take a step and compete in 2023? Or is it like, there's, you know, they should be able to compete for a wild card spot? Like, are you somewhere in between or more in the pessimistic side?
Yeah, I'm in between. The Jets schedule this year is gauntlet. Like, they're going to play the Bills twice. Obviously, I'm not high on the Patriots, but the Patriots have.
They haven't beaten them. So until they beat them, they're a hard game.
Exactly. You know, the Dolphins have beaten 10 out of the last 12 times. They played the Browns. We'll see if Deshaun's there. They played the Bengals. They played the Ravens. They played the Broncos. They played the Packers. They played the Vikings. Like, they're going to be in some dog fights a lot of the week. So, again, like, you can set it to a wild card, but, again, like, it sounds good in theory, but I still have to see what this team looks like in training camp. Like, I have to see at least one unit that looks like it can, like, help, like, carry the team. Because that's one thing I didn't see last year in training camp was even a unit that's like, oh, this unit right here is going to be the thing that carries them, at least, you know, that's going to pop throughout the year. Like, there was nothing for the most part. I mean, outside like Elijah, so a little bit of Corey, Michael Carter a little bit. But yeah, man, right now I'm still like in wait and see mode. I got to see them OTAs, practices and stuff like that. Because I mean, it's easy to say, oh, yeah, it should compete for a wild card. But again, like, their schedule, plus we got to see how everything starts to mesh. So that's kind of where I am in that aspect.
Yeah, I mentioned on SNY, subtle flex, that I'm going to have a hard time. Let me see how I can phrase this properly. If Zach Wilson plays 17 games and you get 17 games out of Mekhi Becton with this current group of roster and the talent they have, not being competitive in December is going to be a huge red flag to probably Zach Wilson, likely. I know we kind of joked and, you know, PFF put out their mock draft of 2023 and whatever. Obviously, it's kind of just a joke at this point, but
you know, if the Jets are picking the top three, it's probably because they're picking another quarterback or Zach doesn't play this year. Like there is no, that is not going to be an excuse. You know, if they go 7-10, Zach shows some steps. I think that's a fair expectation and anything more than that's gravy, but we've seen year over year, right? Like the NFC North is not a good division and the Jets get to play that division this year. While their own division, the AFC North is very good. It's not like they're, you know, you don't know what's going to happen. Deshaun, you could play Jacoby Brissett in the Browns, you know, early in the year, if Deshaun's suspended, or you're playing Mitch Trubisky and like, there's no excuse to go get blown out by them. Or, you know, Minnesota is fine. They're an average NFL team. You should be able to compete with those teams. Yes. The Bills playing the Ravens is going to be a dog fight. The Packers are obviously an elite level team, but there are some games in the schedule, Jacksonville, Detroit, Minnesota, Chicago, that, you got to win some division games end of the day. Like there's no, you cannot go lose to Miami twice, lose to New England twice and be competitive against Buffalo and say, it's okay. So, I'm kind of in the same spot as you. I think seven to eight wins is somewhere in that range, depending on what we see during camp, more likely seven. I think if they get to seven wins, you feel pretty good about the development. They take another step in year three, but you know, the expectation should be, we want to be a wild card team. And then anything else, if you fall short of that and you win seven games and you feel good about Zach, that's a huge W for you. But like the expectation can't be, we were competitive against Tom Brady 1 week for three quarters and then lost. Like that mm-hmm. type of the moral victory stuff is, I think, a thing of the past. I agree with you. I'd like to see in camp, how dominant can this offensive line be, or how dominant can this defensive line be, or can Zach go in there and run training camp and put on a clinic every day or most days and go, no, I'm here. Like I'm ready to go. And like, that's the stuff I want to see more so than, you know, oh, he was even in a scrimmage. Like I want to see like, you know, Elijah and Garrett Wilson go toe to toe with, you know, Sauce and DJ Reed every single day and come out and, you know, look pretty good. So like I mentioned, you know, we'll be back. We have rookie mini camp coming up this weekend. We'll have a pod after that and kind of talk through a little bit of, you know, how some of these young guys looked. Obviously not putting too much stock into rookies playing other rookies, cause that's the same thing they've been doing. But you know, rookie mini camp, and then again, OTA is coming up, mandatory mini camp, which will be, you know, in June. And then, you know, obviously we'll get you guys ready for training camp, breakdown positions, players, you know, what's going on in practice, you know, what, you know, looking forward to the season. Yeah. DJ, anything else to add?
That's about it for me. Right now I'm just on Twitter arguing with fans that keep talking about center. Like, bro, like who told y'all that center is make or break an NFL offense? Like, if you have one, you have a great one, cool. If you don't, you'll be just fine, brother. You need skill players, guards, and tackles, and you'll be okay.
Fair enough. Yeah, and I'm quote tweeting PFF George here, and
I'm not
entertaining that shit. Yeah.
I didn't even say draft Malik Willis. Like, what do you mean draft Malik
And then
Willis?
The best part of it was just saying, like, go draft George Pickens after just drafting Garrett Wilson and paying Corey Davis and drafting Elijah Moore. Like, at some level, I wanted the Jets to double up at receiver, but I wanted them to get, like, in the fifth or sixth round, or, like, bring a Keelan Cole back or just some depth there. But not like take a premium pick on multiple receivers. That'd be four premium picks a receiver and paying a guy top dollar in the course of 12 months. But I digress. We will be back. Appreciate everyone kind of tuning in, and you know, stay tuned for some updates kind of on the pod as we kind of get this thing going here.